It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by on-camera and voiceover talent RodHunter.com and the law offices of Matthew Simone. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist Bob Siegel.
Welcome to the program that enjoys taking your Bible questions. Here's a question that came my way. Bob, are most Christians being disobedient about the Sabbath? Recently, I met some people from the Seventh-day Adventist Church. They claim that Saturday is the true Sabbath day, not Sunday. That's why they hold their church services on Saturday. They even have Sabbath school instead of Sunday school. Well, I'd be happy to talk about this. Let's quickly deal with the easy part of the question, then we'll move into the heart of it. For the record, Saturday is the Sabbath day, not Sunday. The Seventh-day Adventists are correct about the day. However, and it's a significant however, we're avoiding an even more obvious question. So what? It's not as if we are getting a new revelation here. Those who worship on Sunday are already very aware that the original Jewish Sabbath was on a Saturday. They know this even if they go their whole lives without ever even meeting a Seventh-day Adventist. They do not worship on Sunday because they are confused as to what day of the week it is. They worship on Sunday because that's the day Jesus rose from the dead. This was the reason for the early church meeting on Sunday, and the tradition has continued. And the original church, my friends, was made up primarily of Jews. I assure you, as Jews, they knew what day of the week the Sabbath was on. They met on Sunday to commemorate the resurrection, and yet this was a custom, not a command. There is no command in the New Testament as to what day one must go to church. Churches can meet any day of the week they want. It just so happens that Sunday was chosen for a particular reason, and this tradition has remained. Because of the tradition, most people all the way to this day, 2,000 years later, have Sunday off. So it's a very convenient day to meet. Other days would be less convenient. And frankly, for these reasons, Sunday is probably going to remain the day that churches meet for a very long time. Now, it's true that sometimes Christians, aware that Saturday is the Sabbath, still incorrectly refer to Sunday as a new Sabbath day for Christians. I say incorrectly because Sunday is anything but a day of rest, and that is what the original Sabbath was about. Rest, true. It was meant to also be a day of reflection, but primarily the Sabbath was a day when people stopped working. Exodus 31, for 6 days work is to be done, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of rest, holy to the Lord. My friends, is Sunday a restful day for your pastor? It's probably his busiest day of the week. Is he being a bad example by working hard in front of us? What about the rest of the staff? What about the deacons, the Sunday school teachers, the ushers, those who work in the nursery? In fact, to any church member at all, Sunday is not supposed to be a passive experience, but very active, with heartfelt worship, meaningful fellowship, expression, interaction, even the confession of sins if necessary. Is this a rest? If you think it is, I hope I never go on a vacation with you. On my day off, I lie on the beach. I don't go to church. In fact, on my day off, I can think of about 100 things I'd rather do than go to church. Okay, now that we've straightened out which day the Sabbath comes on, let's press forward to what was probably the heart of the surface question. Are Christians commanded to obey the Sabbath whatever day of the week it is? They are not. Jesus came to offer a new covenant. Matthew 5. Do not think that I have come to abolish the law and the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. As Christians, we are no longer under the law, but rather a fulfillment of the law. What does this mean exactly? In what way is the law fulfilled? To start with, instead of outward commands, God offers us a relationship with His Spirit who changes our hearts and makes us, hopefully, so loving that we no longer need commands such as don't kill, don't steal, don't mess around with your neighbor's wife, etc. If we are already loving, if we are already unselfish, if we are already treating people the way we want to be treated, those incentives will come naturally. Jesus went on in Matthew 7 to say, "In everything, do to others what you would have them do to you, for this sums up the law and the prophets." We call this a fulfillment of the moral law. The other part of the law, ritual law, was fulfilled through Jesus' death on the cross. The animal sacrifices of old were a foreshadowing of what Jesus would later do for all people. The blood of lambs and bulls provided a picture of atonement so that people needing to be saved by Jesus could be saved before he came. Admittedly, there is some confusion and some debate and some controversy over exactly what kind of law the Sabbath was. Was it ritual? Was it moral? I would place it in the category of a ritual, such as other commanded feasts and holy days. But wherever we anchor this custom, it is undeniable that the Sabbath was a part of the Mosaic law one way or the other, and this law has been fulfilled by Jesus, who asked us to live under the new covenant. When people like the Seventh-day Adventists single out a command such as the Sabbath as a law that we must continue to honor, they open a whole new can of worms. And this was a can of worms that Paul addressed when he wrote the Galatians. The Galatians had isolated circumcision as a practice to continue, even under the new covenant. Paul told them that if they were going to return to the law, they must embrace the entire law. They could not cherry-pick the ones they wanted and ignore all the others. Nobody today claiming to follow the law takes Paul's words to heart. Oddly enough, the Seventh-day Adventists themselves serve as the greatest example of the irony. Have they returned to the animal sacrifices, almost half of the laws? Of course not. But they have added a new prohibition against eating meat. Yes, my Adventist friends are vegetarians. This is somewhat perplexing, inasmuch as meat was not only allowed in the Old Testament, but actually commanded in certain feasts, like the Passover. Why aren't they honoring that part of the law? But I don't want to address this question through arguments of logic or consistency alone. The scripture actually settles the issue quite clearly. Colossians 2, 16 through 17. "Therefore, do not let anyone judge you by what you eat or drink, or with regard to a religious festival, a new moon celebration, or a Sabbath day. These are a shadow of the things that were to come. The reality, however, is found in Christ." My friends, it is difficult to hold on to some kind of New Testament Sabbath command after reading a verse like that. And you're thinking, okay, Bob, but now I'm more confused than ever. I can understand how Jesus fulfilled animal sacrifices through his death on the cross. That makes sense. I can also see how the Holy Spirit put God's law in our hearts, fulfilling the moral law. But how exactly did Jesus fulfill the Sabbath? Okay, if we're not supposed to obey it, it's at least supposed to be fulfilled. How was it fulfilled? My friend, that's an excellent question, and the book of Hebrews provides a long, detailed, complicated answer. Relax. Here are the Cliff Notes. Originally, it was God who rested from creation on the seventh day. I know he's God. He doesn't need a rest like we need a rest. It means he stopped. He ceased. Now, to some of the ancient rabbis, this did not mean a literal 24-hour day. They believed that the seventh day or Sabbath day continues, and that enjoying God's creation is an ongoing, nonstop celebration of the Sabbath day. Had life remained a paradise, this rest or celebration or enjoyment would have been easier to understand. Unfortunately, when our ancestors Adam and Eve fell into sin, everything changed, including the world itself. Romans 8. "For the creation was subjected to frustration, not by its own choice, but by the will of the one who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be liberated from its bondage to decay and brought into the glorious freedom of the children of God." When Jesus returns, he will restore the world to the Garden of Eden-type paradise it once was. This means enjoying the Sabbath and living in God's kingdom are one and the same thing. Christ has not returned yet, but he does offer a relationship with you now, a relationship in which the kingdom of God can rule in your heart and give you peace in your heart. This experience, according to the author of Hebrews, provides a sample or foreshadowing of Christ's future kingdom. He called it tasting of the powers of the age to come. In short, being delivered from sin, placed in harmony with God's kingdom, his rule, and his paradise creation is the authentic way to experience the Sabbath. It's true that originally God also gave the ancient Hebrews a day of the week that looked toward this, a day to rest from their labors, a day to meditate more on him. This is still a good idea as far as practical advice goes, but there is no longer any commandment or any holiness associated with a particular day of the week. What is special is resting from your own labors and basking in our relationship with the Spirit of God, who gives us a sample of what it will be like when the whole world is restored to God's paradise, also called God's Sabbath. And this relationship with God, you're supposed to experience every day, not on the Sabbath day. Every day is the Sabbath day. This is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious.
Call Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. It's good to be with you this evening. We have a special guest with us in the studio. Michael Branch is Executive Officer of ECTLC, standing for East County Transitional Living Center. ECTLC is a unique faith-based organization located in East County, San Diego. It addresses homelessness, addiction, and other social challenges with life-changing solutions that seek to provide a hand up. Michael has an Associate in Science degree in Administration of Justice
Justice from West Valley College, a Bachelor of Arts in Biblical Studies from Southern California Seminary, and a Master of Social Work degree from the University of Southern California. I have to ask you, is that West Valley, is that the one that's in the Los Gatos, San Diego area? That is where I grew up.
Yes, I grew up in the Bay Area. Born in Los Gatos, then moved
beautiful
to Santa Cruz.
Area. Yeah. Oh, and I lived in Santa Cruz for one summer, too. That's a beautiful area.
It's gorgeous, yeah.
I love San Diego, don't get me wrong, but Northern California, I don't think Southern California holds a candle to it.
I would have to agree.
Especially the redwoods.
And, it's gorgeous up there.
It's awesome. Well, we're really excited to have you here. You come well recommended. Tell us first a little bit about what brought you to Christianity, and then after that, I want to hear what brought you to this particular ministry. A lot of people don't think of doing a ministry to the homeless. It's very important, especially with all we're hearing about in the news with situations such as San Francisco and Los Angeles, how out of control everything is. And I won't even describe what people are describing on the news out in the streets. But anyway, let's back up. What led you to Jesus Christ in the first place?
Yeah, so growing up, I grew up in somewhat of a dysfunctional home. My parents got a divorce when we were real young, and they were young. And the women in my family went to church, and they took the children, my grandmother and my mom, and none of the men went to church. But as a kid, I remember going to Los Gatos Christian Church with my grandmother, who primarily raised me. I think that was my first experience with Jesus, where I knew he was real. You know, I was baptized. I understood that he was real, that he was my savior. And then as I got older, I was your Mark 1 motto, prodigal son. So looking back now, I understand how it was a good setup for me to walk away from the Lord. A lot of the behavior that was modeled for me growing up was not conducive to staying married or staying on track with the Lord. So as I got older, at a very young age, at 21 years old, I became a cop. So that's like, you know, I wanted to go into
is interesting. Yeah. So you have a law enforcement background too.
Correct, yeah.
So I lived up there too. You might have, for all we know, this may not be the first time we met. I was pulled over for several speeding tickets.
Oh, really? So. Well, I worked for the Highway Patrol for 5 years.
Maybe you were one of those guys.
You never know. Yeah, so growing up, I think looking back, I was self-medicating as some of what was going on in my house and being raised by my grandparents who did a really, you know, the best job they could. But
grandparents can only do so much because they're several generations removed from you and
they're
slowing down a little bit.
Yeah, so I fell in with the wrong crowd and everything that goes along with that in high school.
That's interesting, though, because law enforcement is not what we think about when we think about falling in with the wrong crowd. So there must have been something in you that had moral scruples despite all that, if you wanted to enforce the law.
Yeah, so I think that what it was my grandmother, I think, she was a very strong Christian woman and instilled those values in me. And also the men in my life, even though they had a very strong work ethic. They were all in construction and they all did very well for themselves, but they believed in working hard and playing hard. So as I grew up and wanted to go into the Navy, my dad had been drafted during Vietnam and he said, yeah, don't go into the military, just go to junior college and figure out what you want to do. So when I went there, it's when I kind of decided the only thing that sounded fun to me was law enforcement or administration of justice. So as I started taking some of those classes, I figured I better straighten up. And so, like I said, I think I grew up faster than I should have, right? So what I would do is I worked full time my junior and senior year of high school. I would go to work for Safeway and throw frozen food from 4 to 8 in the morning. Then I'd go to high school, play a sport, come back at night, and stock shelves another 4 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was mature even
though
I
can't imagine anymore being that busy and doing all those things and not just wanting to crash at the end of the day.
Right. But yeah.
Just when you're in your 20s, we were able to do that sort of thing.
Yeah. So, you know, I think it was, that's how I fell into that lifestyle into becoming a cop. So
how many years were you a cop?
7.5 years.
Okay. That's a reasonable period of time.
I worked for 5 years for the Highway Patrol out of the San Jose office. And then I lateraled over to the city of Sunnyvale and they are public safety. So they do both. They're cops and firefighters. So when you're a cop, you carry your turnouts in the trunk.
I never realized that one could be a cop and a firefighter at the same time. I knew that firemen could also make arrests. I had heard that. But I had not heard that cops could put out fires.
Yes. Yeah, so in the state of California, there's two agencies that do both. One of them is Sunnyvale and the other one is Rohnert Park.
That is very interesting.
Yeah. So that was a time in my life where I kind of fell away from the Lord, and I just really lost my relationship with the Lord and was not living my life the way that I knew that I should be. And then in my mid-20s, at around, I think I was 27 at the time, I made a decision I didn't want to stay in law enforcement my whole life. And so I left that to chase my dream of becoming a Navy SEAL. So I left the Bay Area and came down to San Diego. And at the time, I had started to date who is now my wife, my current wife. She had no idea what a Navy SEAL was.
That's one of the most prestigious and difficult things the Navy does, my understanding.
Yes.
It's no easy thing being a Navy SEAL.
Some of us think that, yeah. There's quite a few prestigious jobs in the military, but that one seems to be the most famous or notorious. So I left, came down to San Diego, and then my wife had been previously married, so I had an instant family, and my daughters moved down here with us. And the first few years that I was in the Navy, you know, I made it through SEAL training and became a SEAL, and my first deployment was a...
Wow, from top to SEAL, you've got quite an impressive resume here.
Yeah, they were both very fun careers.
Okay, well, hold that thought. We'll be right back. My special guest, Michael Branch. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785, that's 447-8785, for W&S Electric Incorporated, license number 480-539, W&S Electric.
Is it really true that there will be peace in the Middle East if we just have a two-state solution? Or are some people instead challenging Israel's right to exist at all? Is it true that Jews have no historical claim to the Holy Land and stole that land from a people called the Palestinians? Bob Siegel's latest book challenges the historical revision of the Israeli-Palestinian situation and shows how Israel's struggle may soon be the struggle of the entire world. The Holocaust Against Israel by Bob Siegel, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Have a holly jolly Christmas, and in case you didn't hear, oh, by golly, have a holly jolly Christmas this year.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. My guest joining me today is Michael Branch, Executive Officer of the East County Transitional Living Center. Michael, we were partway through your background, you know, moving up toward your testimony. I know you became a Christian at a young age, but you're in kind of the having fallen away part of it, and yet very impressive stuff, having been a police officer, a Navy SEAL. Go ahead and continue.
Okay, yeah, so my wife and daughters come down to San Diego. I'm a new SEAL, going my first deployment in 98 or 99, and that was a peacetime deployment. And then on my very second, then I came back, did a year and a half long workup. And on my second deployment is when 9/11 happened. And so we were immediately deployed and did some work overseas at the very beginning, right after 9/11 happened.
Where was this, Afghanistan or Iraq? Or?
Well, it was in areas, actually in East Timor, and some areas at the very beginning before we went into Afghanistan. Then I came home and trained for a year and went to Iraq at the beginning of the war in 03. So my platoon was the SEAL Team 3 was at the very beginning of the war when they took down the gas and oil platforms and they started that shock and awe campaign. And then SEAL Team 5, who I was with, we were flown in March of 03, just as the push was going in before they had made it all the way to Baghdad. And then we relieved SEAL Team 3 and we pushed all the way in. And then our primary mission for the whole deployment was, I think, 9 or 10 months long. And we were at the beginning of the war when we were hunting Saddam and anyone else on the block.
Now, are the SEALs similar to, I mean, we think of the Marines as the first ones to hit the beaches. Isn't that similar in some ways to what the Navy SEALs do? They're kind of the first in line?
Yeah, so it...
Or a little more covertly, perhaps?
I would say covertly. Yeah. So there's a lot of, especially nowadays, even, and I've been out since 05, and so much has changed, but there's a lot of covert units that operate even outside of the military that are doing work gathering intelligence and assisting the special operations forces. So, and there's a lot of other special operations.
So did you do the kind of stuff that you could tell us, but you'd have to kill us afterwards, that kind of stuff?
Something like that, yeah. Okay. So, yeah, so came back from Iraq, and I was pretty much a mess, let's just say. Like, looking back now, I understand what was going on. I had some, I would say, some unmitigated trauma from, you know, growing up, and then into my 7 years in law enforcement and then my career in the SEAL teams. And I just happened to be one of those guys that was not making healthy decisions. At the time, there was kind of a stigma on admitting that you had mental health issues or substance abuse issues. And so I hid them, not very well. And I was basically self-medicating my stress through alcohol, and then it led to substance abuse. And so what happened, and then I'm getting to the testimony part, how I was reintroduced to the Lord. So, you know, I was kind of leading a double life for a while, going to church, pretending like everything was okay, but really. Oh, and so after I get out of the Navy, I become a bounty hunter for 5 years.
Oh my goodness. Your resume just goes on and on. You are one interesting guy.
I had some interesting careers in my life. And so I did that for 5 years. I worked for the Parents Corporation of Aladdin Bail Bonds.
I have to just stop you for a moment. How did your wife react to all of this? I imagine being the wife of a Navy SEAL, even if you're not deployed in Iraq or close to it, would be pretty nerve-wracking. How did she handle all of this?
Well, she's just an amazing woman. She was also she's 100% Sicilian, and she was a police dispatcher, a 911 dispatcher.
Okay, so she has enough of a background with that it's not completely foreign territory to her.
Right. And she raised 3 daughters without a husband because I was gone for 7 years straight. So she's a very resilient and amazing woman. And one of the reasons I think I'm even here today. So yeah, after my military service, I got out. I did bounty hunting and worked on also a protection detail for the Prince of Equatorial Guinea. And so I was busy working all the time, still self-medicating. And essentially my wife and pastor at the time had a little meeting with me, a little intervention, and they just essentially, my wife said, hey, this is enough. You gotta get some help for what's going on. And I was in denial and agreed that I would go get some help because I had tried a few times leading up to that to try to get control of my drinking.
Like through Alcoholics Anonymous?
Yeah,
things like
exactly.
That.
Yeah. And I had even quit drinking and using drugs for just about a year and immediately went back to it. And so basically, I went to the Veterans Administration, and they only have a short-term program there. It's a 28-day program where I eventually ended up working years later. And then after that, they offer treatment at Veterans Village of San Diego, which is a veteran-serving nonprofit here in San Diego County, and then the VA pays for treatment there. And I definitely needed long-term treatment, but you have to be homeless to get into there. And I was not homeless. So,
like, you had a very good home and a good wife.
Yeah, exactly. And so that was the one, fortunately, that I believe now it was a gift that happened. So my pastor told me about a faith-based recovery ministry in East County, San Diego, and that it was essentially a 1-year discipleship ministry. So even though it was about recovery, it was really about finding your relationship with the Lord again. And he said, that's what you need. You need to figure out what's going on between you and the Lord. And so I agreed, and I went reluctantly, and the rest is history. I had my Road to Damascus moment with the Lord my first week there. Because really, I
have. Is this the same organization you're with now?
Correct.
That you went to? Okay, yeah. So you're a product of the organization and you're giving back to the organization.
Exactly. Yeah. So I show up to East County Transitional Living Center. My wife and pastor drop me off. And the first 90 days for the
men. Do you live there on their campus?
Correct.
I see.
It's okay. A 1-year, 4-phase discipleship ministry. So the phases are broken down into 3 months. And the first 90 days for single men and single women, the men go out to a ranch in Del Zura. We call it the Men's Training Center, and it's way out the 94 close to the Tecate border. And then the women go to another home in a local home here in San Diego, and we do the first 90 days in each of those homes. And that's where I really was saved again.
Okay, well, yeah. You have a fascinating story. I could see 3 or 4 television movies just from any one part of this. Hold with me. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. Looking for a church that will not only challenge you, but help you to feel like a part of a family? Why not try Skyline Church, located in Rancho San Diego near 94 in Hamishaw? I can testify firsthand to Skyline because I myself am a member. When you visit, tell them Bob Siegel sent you and ask about that free week-long trip to Bermuda for first-time visitors. They'll look at you like they don't know what you're talking about, and you will not, in fact, get any free trip to Bermuda. But you'll still be glad for a chance to experience Skyline Church. You don't want to go to Bermuda anyway. Too hot. And people who approach that area have been known to disappear. But they don't disappear at Skyline. Those who visit usually can't wait to come back.
Skyline Church.
Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel, in the middle of a fascinating interview with Michael Branch, Executive Officer of the East County Transitional Living Center. Michael, welcome back to our program.
Thanks, Bob.
So you left us off when you're in this rehab center, which ends up being the same organization that you later on went on staff with.
Yeah, so I completed the one-year program, and during that time decided that I was going to, you know, I had surrendered my life to Christ during that program and decided that I needed to have a total change of everything that I, you know, had been doing. And moving forward, I knew that I wanted to do something that was more conducive to being home on a regular basis, and that would just assist my recovery, my walk with the Lord, and being a good husband and father. So I decided to go to Bible college at Southern California Seminary to get an undergrad in biblical studies. And I knew that I, at some way, shape, or form, I wanted to serve the Lord. And after that, and during that time, I decided that my giftings were probably, they led me in the degree of getting a social work degree, because I thought with both of those, with my Christian worldview, my biblical training, and then wanting to help other folks, other Christians or non-Christians, find their way to healing. And so I decided to get my master's degree in social work. And then I started, after that, I went to work. My first job was with Veterans Village of San Diego as an alcohol and drug counselor. And then I moved to the VA in La Jolla, got a job there as an addiction therapist, and got my hours as a licensed clinical social worker. And then after that, I moved to it's really an outpatient clinic of the Veterans Administration called the Vet Center. And they specifically treat combat veterans, military sexual trauma survivors, or family members of those that were deceased while on active duty, whether that was in combat or a training accident or natural causes. And so I worked for the VA for the last 8 years as a licensed clinical social worker, specializing in, you know, mental health and addiction. And then last February, I think it was January 30th, Harold Brown, the former CEO of East County Transitional Living Center, passed after a long battle with cancer.
Oh, yeah. Sorry to hear that.
And he was the CEO while I was there in 2010. And he pretty much, him with some other folks in the East County community that helped to stand this organization up, back just before, right around 2008. It's been around about 13, 15 years. And it started out as Set Free Ministries, and then it became East County Transitional Living Center, I think, in 2008. So after Harold passed, they started a search for a new CEO, and I put my hat in the ring. And then 6 months later, they made a decision, and I've been on board at East County Transitional Living Center now for the past 3.5 months.
Well, I'm glad they reached out to somebody who was already there. It's very common for organizations and churches especially to always go out to New Jersey and ship in somebody, and to have somebody who was already there, who knows the ropes, that a lot of the other staff are familiar with it. I just think that was a real wise decision. That's where we should be drawing our leadership from.
I agree. And there were several other very well-qualified candidates in the community, and some of them had been through East County Transitional Living Center, have been graduates, have worked there. Some were prior board members. So they had a lot of folks that are intimately connected. And I agree, it's important to find someone that has some skin in the game there and understands what's going on.
I think so. Now, you've already alluded a little bit to the programs just by nature of what you were receiving yourself. But for our audience, what specifically, what are the different kinds of programs that you offer?
Yeah, so let me start with, there's a program for single men and single women, and those are separate tracks. And then there's a family restoration ministry, and then emergency housing. So let me start with the...
So this is not just, the homelessness is just one of many, many things that you do.
That's correct. This is not a homeless shelter. This is a one-year, four-phase discipleship ministry, and it rehabilitates.
But you do have people who are homeless go through there. And,
correct.
And it gets them off the street.
Absolutely. And we do not discriminate where anyone comes from. There's only two types of people that we cannot accept. One is registered sex offenders. So we screen out registered sex offenders because we have children on campus and
naturally,
on the main campus.
Yeah.
And then somebody who has a psychotic disorder that's unstable. But once they are stabilized and on medication, then they can come into the program. But really, we'll take people. We're one of the very few programs, I think the only program in San Diego County, that if a local pastor or the El Cajon Police Department or someone in the community, a family member wants to bring someone over, or just someone wants to roll right off the street into our front office, we'll take them. That doesn't happen anywhere else.
So there's curriculum and teaching involved. What would that be like? What would a typical class
go through? In the morning, it starts with Psalms and Proverbs and a devotion in the morning. And then throughout the day, based around their other duties, because this is also a hand-up working ministry. So part of the way that we sustain ourselves is through work therapy contracts. So at the same time that these folks are kind of earning their way through, because it's cost-free, they're also gaining work experience and building their resume and learning life skills. So we do start out with Psalms and Proverbs and devotionals in the morning, and then throughout the day we have Bible studies, anger management classes, financial literacy. If you have not received your high school education or a GED, that's required, and it's actually funded by a local East County organization. The East County Posse pays for everyone that goes through our program to get their GED.
Now, is that because just completing something like that, it does something for the ego and the self-esteem? Is that why that's a requirement?
Yeah, several things. One, it's definitely a sense of accomplishment, something that they...
Yeah, because they're going through life saying, I didn't even graduate high school.
They
must not be feeling very good about themselves.
Right, so it instills self-confidence, and then it also helps... On an application, some people ask, do you have a high school diploma or a GED? So it helps with finding a job and building their resume. And so we also do what's called, we have a Celebrate Recovery Step Study. It's basically like AA or NA, but it's Bible-based. It's a 12-step program for people struggling with alcohol or other addictions. And there's an ACE Overcomers class that we're going to incorporate, which is a faith-based curriculum for folks that experience childhood trauma.
Wow. Fascinating. Okay, hold with me for one more segment. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
Thank you.
Reader enthusiasm for the dangerous Christmas ornament doesn't end. Check out this customer review from Amazon.com. Anytime I read a book where I want to find out what happens in the next chapter all the way to the last page of the book is a great book. This is the experience you and your children will have reading The Dangerous Christmas Ornament. I read the whole thing in a short time despite a busy schedule. The interesting plot lines has the flavor of realism because the author is writing from his own childhood experiences and ours as well. You will relate to the authentic family dynamics and the playground trials and triumphs described in the book. The book will also make you laugh as some of the characters have a great sense of humor, delivering good-natured jokes mixed with a dose of sarcasm. Most importantly, the book throughout has a moral dimension to it that takes it to a deeper level, making it a preferred selection to read to your kids. Enjoy! The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available in bookstores and libraries.
Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. He's got a bag that's filled with toys for boys and girls again. Hear those sleigh bells jingle, jangle, oh, what a beautiful sight. So jump in bed and cover your head, 'cause Santa Claus comes tonight.
Well, actually, here comes the last segment of the Bob Siegel Show. I'm your host. I'm here with Michael Branch, Executive Officer of the East County Transitional Living Center. You've been talking about some of the different programs that are being offered, some of the curriculum. Go ahead and continue from where we left off.
Yeah, so we have a single men and single women track, and then we have a family restoration ministry, and then we do have 60-day emergency housing, too, for folks that come in, and this might not be the program of their choice, but we help our case managers will help them case manage them into a program that works for them, other permanent supportive housing. So at any given time on our 5 different campuses, we can feed, clothe, and house anywhere between 350 and 550 men, women, and children.
And are you doing 3 meals a day, 2 meals a day?
That's correct.
Wow.
In a year, we serve over 400,000 meals out of our kitchen.
Wow, that is something else.
It's incredible. Our food director, Bobby Jeffries, does an amazing job with the assistance of a lot of local Feeding San Diego, other nonprofits, and churches in the area help to support that.
How long would you say people are with you before they give their lives to Christ? Or I guess I shouldn't assume that everybody gives their life to Christ. That's not a requirement. You're going to help them out anyway, I'm sure. But do you see a lot of people become Christians through this ministry?
Yes, actually, there's a pool on campus there because it was the old Fab 7 Motel on 1527 East Main Street in El Cajon. So there's a pool there that we have. And I don't know the exact number, but there's been thousands of baptisms.
Oh,
in that
that's
pool.
Wonderful.
Yeah,
that
so it's
wonderful.
Amazing. I don't have any exact numbers, and it depends. Some people right away, you know, who have known the Lord, some haven't, some in the first weeks or months, and others toward the middle or the end. But it's an amazing program that takes, you know, families off the streets, gives them food, clothing, and shelter, safety, security, and helps to give them some of the skills that they need to, you know, get back on their feet.
Since reaching out to the homeless is one of the things you do, what would you say makes your programs different from other programs that also reach out to the homeless?
So for us, I can't speak for all the other programs, and there are some other, you know, good programs in the area, but we are a working ministry. So folks that come in are going to get up in the morning, brush their teeth, take a shower, make their bed, clean their room, and go to work and learn how to, you know, show up at work every day. Because those of us, if you don't work, you don't eat. That was something that Harold was famous for saying. And so we teach people
life
skills.
So we're not just going to give you fish. We're going to teach you how to use a fishing pole.
Exactly. Yep. And so we're not just a shelter. We actually will rehabilitate and give people the skills they need so that when they leave, they should have a job and other permanent supportive housing. They're not just going to come in and hang out in the shelter. And so, yeah, I think that's what makes us unique. We can take somebody that has no money to enter into a program and no place to live and no job. And when they finish the program, they will have a job and a place to go and be a productive member of society again, which is the goal. That's the ultimate goal.
Michael, I'm sure a lot of people are listening right now wondering how they can help out. What people do to support this vibrant and very important ministry?
Yeah, thank you for asking. So they can locate us at ectlc.org, and there's a place to donate. We also have a...
And you are 100% faith-based, right? You're not getting anything from the state or anything like that.
No, not at all. So that's the other thing. We do have the 60-day emergency shelter, which is we call that like the secular side of the program. So it's run through community block grants through the city of El Cajon.
Oh, okay.
And so if they take someone off the streets in El Cajon and they just need a place to bring them for 60 days, they're not required to go to Bible studies or to program. We do not proselytize.
Right.
And then they're gone in 60 days. And that's run through community block grants through La Mesa. But the whole other program side is all self-funded.
And they'll tell you, since they're coming through the state, you can't proselytize them. Okay.
Correct. And we will still help our case managers, will help them find a program of their choice or other permanent supportive housing. And, you know, we respect that there's going to be other people that just need a place to come in and get some emergency shelter and move on. And we think that's in line with the gospel.
In our last few minutes, I was wondering if there were a few stories you could tell. You can change the names or not use names. I don't want you to divulge anybody's privacy, but are there a couple of cases of people that came to you and just talk a little bit about what their life story was like and how this program was of such help to them?
Yeah, so we also are just starting to build up our YouTube channel, the East County Transitional Living Center YouTube channel.
Okay.
And all our other social media platforms where you can find just some amazing testimonies of families and single men and women that come through there. Every month we prepare like testimonies of the month. And I mean, there's such a wide variety of testimonies. You know, some that stand out are people that have spent years and years in prison and have come back out and reoffended and then found their way to the program, were given grace by the justice system and never really left the ministry. There's people who have overdosed 15 times from fentanyl and were brought back with Narcan, and then they turn their life around and have jobs and a place to live and are thriving and come back as part of the alumni and to give back to the organization so they can kind of give their testimony for other people that might have lost hope and can't believe that they can turn their life around. So yeah, we see it every day, which is amazing. For us, it's just another day on a frontline ministry, but it's unbelievable for someone that might not have the gifting to deal with that personally. There's other ways that they can support a program like that. There's plenty of ways to support. Even if they wanted to volunteer, they can get online onto our website and hook up with our volunteer coordinator and figure out how they can give back and be a part of, in some way, shape, or form, bringing these people from a life of chaos and disorder and living on the streets and on drugs to actually being a productive member of society without having to actually be an intimate part of it. They can be a part of it as a teammate and someone that comes alongside us and helps us continue this mission.
That's awesome. Does your wife get involved with you at all?
Well, my wife is still working. She has a full-time job, so she definitely supports me in every way that she can. And whenever she is at functions, a lot of the people that we met 12 years ago, because she supported me when I went through this program, she was there a lot, coming to Bible studies and supporting me. She had taken a year off at work while I was going through and supports in every way that she can, yeah.
All right. Well, Michael, you're a wonderful guest. I hope you'll come back on our program again sometime. Maybe bring somebody who wants to share their testimony and
that would be
share
amazing.
It over the air. We'd love to do that.
Absolutely.
All right. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. We will see you next week.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by the Law Offices of Matthew Simone.